So some interesting news coming out of Russia. It turns out that the voters evidently overwhelmingly approved a constitutional amendment to allow Vladimir Putin to stay in office or in power until 2036. Evidently, he was supposed to be out in 2024, but this overwhelming vote, which some people are questioning, are going to give him the ability to stay until 2036, which would make him, what, about 86 years old, something like that? Yeah, scary times. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, not just Putin's, you know, lifetime appointment there, but also the, well, is it a hoax? Is it real? Was he briefed? Wasn't he briefed on this bounty story? I've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us. Sarah is the author of the best-selling book, Hiding in Plain Sight. Also the other bestseller, The View from Flyover Country. She's also the host of the wonderful podcast, Gaslit Nation. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's start with Putin. 2036, he'll still be in office.
Yeah, well, that was the plan. I mean, when he took office on New Year's Eve in 1999, like, it wasn't with the intent of leaving. It was with the intent of dismantling, fledgling democratic institutions in Russia, creating a greater surveillance state that existed, getting revenge for the dissolution of the Soviet Union, enhancing his own power, making it a mafia state. 2006 was really the year, I think, that he began to clinch that power, and it became steadily worse over the next 14 years. A lot of naivete on the part of the West. You had George Bush, you know, looking into his eyes and seeing his alleged soul. You had Obama laughing off the threat during the 2012 debate and then doing nothing to stop it during his second term in office, thus leading us into our current situation with Trump, the Kremlin asset. So yeah, I hope Americans take away from this what I've been saying for a long time, which is once an autocrat gets into office, it is very hard to get them out, and they will rewrite law so that they stay there forever. And so that's the door that we have already opened up here in the U.S.
So you're saying that the cautionary tale is this is something Trump would aspire to.
Oh, absolutely. And he's got lots of backers to help him do it. And if it's not Trump, it will be a selected successor. And I don't mean selected by the American people in a free and fair election. I mean an appointee, possibly Ivanka, possibly, you know, some sort of, you know, dynastic arrangement, or just a slicker version of Trump who serves the same interests, both in the U.S. and abroad, because he has dismantled these institutions of accountability, institutions of democratic stability, you know, regardless of what his particular role as an individual is in it. That damage has been done.
Yeah, and now we see this story come out that this Russian spy unit, probably, you know, Putin, paid the Taliban to put a bounty on the head of U.S. soldiers. Trump's response today, on the day that this news breaks that Putin is basically in for life, is that it's fake news. It's all a hoax.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt it's all a hoax, but this strategy of selectively leaking things that U.S. intelligence and allegedly parts of Congress have known about for a year that have been endangering our military, that certainly John Bolton knew all about, but instead decided to pursue a book deal. That's grotesque in his own right. My guess is that he knew. Perhaps he wasn't briefed, because that's not where Trump gets the information that he needs to know. He gets it from his mafia associates. He gets it from people like Ivanka and Kushner, who get it from, you know, whoever they need to know in government, whether it's about rigging an election here or making a kleptocratic financial arrangement abroad, or, you know, getting involved in some sort of military incursion that they should not be doing. There's all sorts of things. I kind of believe Trump if he says he's not pouring through briefs and reading papers. He doesn't do that in part because he doesn't care. Like, he doesn't need to know. He just wants to know the very basics. And he's actually not unique in that way. Like, George W. Bush was that way. But also, you know, he's a lifelong mafia operator. And so I think the way his thought process works is, I don't want to know this. Like, that's for the lawyers to know. That's for my lackeys to know, so that if I am ever brought into court, I can just, honest to God, say, I wasn't aware of that. And there'll be no proof that I ever was aware of that. They do a lot of things in this kind of coded, calibrated way. Michael Cohen discussed that in his testimony in February 2019. That said, it doesn't make it any less horrific. You know, the groundwork was already laid. Russia was involved in U.S. meetings with the Taliban in fall 2019. Like, this is another one of those old stories that, you know, was horrific to start out with and just has another layer.
Yeah, you know, and to highlight that, I've been reading through John Bolton's book, the publisher sent it. I didn't buy it. I would never buy it. But, you know, as I'm reading through it, it basically just confirms everything that we've always known, all the things that we suspected. It just confirms that. And to highlight your point, you know, Trump doesn't read the briefings. He mostly gets it from Fox News, which is even more scarier than with his with mob associates.
Yeah, he gets it from Fox. And, you know, people need to recognize that Fox is not just a propaganda outlet for the GOP, you know, to spread culture war materials and things like that. It's a way of relaying information to Trump, and there are people that are directly implicated, like Michael Cohen, the Trump lawyer, only had three clients, and one of them was Sean Hannity. And so people like Sean Hannity have been involved in the policymaking of this administration, and also in the certainly in the cover-ups of the crimes, especially related to the Mueller report, possibly in the crimes themselves. That extends to you know, other personalities who have been at Fox News. So, you know, it's a weapon that was created intentionally to protect a president like Trump. I mean, and that's not me speculating. That's what Roger Ailes admitted. It was created in part after Watergate, so that if there were ever a Republican president that was being investigated for a criminal act, they would have their own guaranteed propaganda apparatus there to defend them. And if Fox had existed during Nixon's time, it's possible that Nixon would have never been, you know, seriously threatened with impeachment, and that there wouldn't have been bipartisan agreement to go forth with that.
Yeah, they have their spin machine. But, you know, it's this weird world because, you know, we're in this globally, we're in chaos. I mean, you know, the country's in chaos, but globally as well. And Der Spiegel had what I thought was an excellent cover on their magazine a couple of weeks ago with the title Fire Devil, A President Burns Down His Own Country, a picture of Trump basically sitting at the Resolute desk with a match as the country behind him burns. And this is kind of where we are, not just as a country, but globally, because we see today that Hong Kong, basically, the Chinese government has imposed a no protest law that, you know, they're just going to lock people up for, you know, for basically being traitors for protesting.
Hello?
I think we lost her.
I'm here.
But my question is, you know, I look at this and we're going through all of this kind of spin around Trump and his incompetence, there's real serious consequence out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, globally, you know, the U.S. has been part of a downward trend for about 6 years, you know, and with Hong Kong, it's heartbreaking. You know, it's heartbreaking to see all of those months of protest come to this. And, you know, and the protesters weren't naive. Like, they knew that this could happen, but to see it borne out in reality and other things in China, the continued abuse of Uyghurs in concentration camps, being forcibly sterilized, all these other things. And on top of that, you have coronavirus. And, you know, one of the things that's sort of striking to me about all the horrors of coronavirus is, you know, we get a lot of stories about, you know, how does the virus work and do we have immunity and these sort of scientific things. But basic things are now gone. Like, the ability of Americans to leave the country is basically gone. You know, we're all banned at the border, certainly of the EU, and at most places, because we're thought of as a diseased population. You know, the border to Canada, and I believe Mexico, they're closed as well. They've stopped making passports. which is just incredible to me because they're saying, oh, it's fine, let's all open up, let's go out. Meanwhile, Americans can't get passports even if they're not going to travel anywhere. You can only do it if it's some sort of, you can prove it's a dire emergency. Even then, you might not get it for months. And just to not have that as a form of identification and as something that you would need to travel, that's a sign of dictatorship. That is what dictatorships do when they're about to consolidate, when they're about to commit acts of mass violence that are going to cause a refugee crisis. So that's sort of one of those things going under the radar that's been alarming to me. You know, I think we have a lot of countries around the world that are on the brink of having a refugee crisis, and they're not the ones that people usually think of, you know, when they think of Syria or Yemen or something like that. They're Western nations that are turning from democracies into autocracies that are brutalizing large segments of the population that have, you know, no job opportunities, no economic relief. I think there would be a lot more mobility if we weren't all trapped in here. And as this plays out over the next 6 to 12 months, especially if the election goes with Trump seizing total control, I don't know what exactly is going to go on. But people should see that. They should see that as a serious warning sign, I think.
Yeah, no, because one of the questions I was going to ask is, you know, with you know, China taking over Hong Kong and imposing this kind of, you know, really draconian law, you know, are we seeing kind of a realigning of the world and returning to a Cold War stance of basically choosing sides and with us left with no side?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird situation with China because China is an autocratic state, but weirdly, the thing that's weird about it is that the Republicans actually seem to dislike this, whereas in most cases, you know, whether it's Russia or Saudi Arabia or Israel, they like it when there's a brutal autocratic leader. They cheer for it. They try to align with it. With China, they've become very critical, and they're bringing up things that I know they, you know, couldn't care less about, like the plight of the Uyghurs, which has been going on for decades. It's obviously gotten much worse in the last 5 years, but they suddenly are bringing this up. There's a sort of bipartisan alignment. I don't trust it at all. You know, I wish it was rooted in genuine concern for human rights and for, the democratic process. But we know the Republicans don't care about those things here. You know, they're actively trying to stomp them out. The Democrats, at least in the leadership, have been largely complacent, have been, you know, signing on to Trump's bills to fund the Republicans to carry out this kind of brutal activity, fund the Trump administration to, you know, commit its treasury heist. So whatever's going on, I don't exactly, you know, grasp what it is. I don't think it's based on any kind of moral foundation. It is some sort of new alignment. We previously had, you know, the axis of autocracies with, you know, U.S., Russia, Turkey, Israel, Saudi Arabia, a few others, Brexit, U.K. with Boris Johnson. And China is kind of, you know, on its own, making deals, sort of stuck in the middle, you know, a big rival. So that might be part of it, is they want to stomp out a rival. But, I'm sorry, I can't buy it when Marco Rubio is going on about human rights violations, or Trump, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's just too much. It's like listening to Kushner talk about criminal justice reform. I'm like, yeah, okay. But anyway.
But so you brought up Kushner. Do you buy the Trump thing today that, he's tired of the woke, you know what? And, because I saw it as, you know, now they're going to really start to crack down and they're going full on racist from this point forward.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're already full-on racist. And I can tell you what Kushner was doing. I actually wrote about this in my book, In Hiding in Plain Sight, which is Kushner wants there to be no consequences for white-collar crime. He has said this fairly explicitly. You know, I quote him at length because his father was a white-collar criminal who committed, you know, a lot of crimes, fraud and blackmail and, you know, all sorts of things. And Kushner thought, basically, my father should not go to jail because we are special people. We don't, you know, we're never going to be treated the way that mere average people are because, you know, we're the Kushners and we're above it all and we have our own set of laws. And that's really how he thinks of the world And he thought it was just so unjust that this could possibly happen to a person like him. And so that's been the impetus of anything that he calls criminal justice reform. It has nothing to do with racial justice. It has nothing to do, you know, with reducing sentences for, you know, somebody, like a poor person who commits a very minor crime and serves a lot of time or is, you know, held without, you know, having their rights read. He doesn't care about any of that. It's just protecting himself and friends because they are white-collar criminals. He's been committing crimes in office. And I think they also, you know, cynically are trying to reach out and say, oh, yeah, you know us. Like, we really want to help out the black folks of America. We care so much. And that's why we stocked our administration with white supremacist Nazis. I mean, I don't think black voters or black people in general are going to fall for this because, you know, the evidence is right there. Trump's also out saying, like, if you touch a Confederate statue, we're going to send the military to, like, go shoot you. So I think that that latter message hits home. And I don't think that Kushner cares at all about racial justice. I mean, Kushner and Ivanka, you know, used to go to a rabbi who taught them that were fear sheep, that they weren't human, that they were like monkeys. I mean, that is what they believe. And they're just as racist as Jeff Sessions, Steve Bannon, Steve Miller, all these other more, I guess, you know, famous for their racism type racist and the white supremacist. In the White House, it's a white supremacist White House. Like that's what it is. I can't really think of too many exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, but so you don't put it, you don't buy into that there's a rift between Kush and Donald Trump?
I mean, maybe in terms of who gets to date Ivanka, but not really beyond that. Sorry. But, you know, I mean, seriously, that's there. That's just kind of hanging in the background.
Oh, no, that's not hanging in the background. That's one of the creepiest things he's ever said. If she wasn't his daughter, he'd be dating her. That will never go out of my mind.
Yes, exactly. And you would think that it would be something to, you know, raise some alarm among all of our, you know, upholders of moral values and family values that populate Congress and the media. But no, we're just going to pretend that that's a totally normal thing to say. We're all just going to, you know, push that one away, never bring it up again, never bring up all those photos, never bring up Trump, you know, allegedly raping a 13-year-old who looked a lot like Ivanka. We're just going to pretend that none of that is actually going on, apparently.
Or any of the Howard Stern tapes of him, you know, going in to check out the talent during his Miss Teen USA pageants and all that. We're going to forget all that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's disgusting. Like, it's just, it's such a network of complicity, this nexus of sex crime, pedophile sex trafficking, you know, obviously exemplified by Jeffrey Epstein, and these publicists in New York City who work to cover up all these guys' tracks. Like, almost all of them shared one publicist, Howard Rubenstein, at one point. Kushner, Trump, Epstein, I think Dershowitz, maybe Dershowitz. I don't want to say that because Dershowitz sues everybody, so I'm just going to leave him out. Also allegedly raping a Epstein victim. I mean, it's a serious problem, and it contributes, obviously, to the you know, national security crisis that we've been experiencing, because we know that all of these actors are working with U.S. policy, U.S. intelligence, foreign affairs, all these things. So it's not like a gossip issue. It's a criminal issue, and it's also deeply perverse and sick and exploitative and should not be so rampant. I mean, just last week, George Nader, one of Trump's associates, was sentenced to 10 years in prison for pedophilia, you know, for I believe, underage rape and possession of child pornography. It's like, why is that such a common attribute of the people in his midst? It's like pedophilia and white supremacy and treason. Those are like, you know, the holy or the unholy trinity of the Trump crime cohort.
I think that would be an interesting bumper
there,
sticker. Trump, treason, pedophilia, and, jeez.
White supremacy.
There you go.
White supremacy.
You can't fit all that on one bumper sticker. We need a whole, you know, like a whole back of a trailer. But here's the thing. You know, I still think, you know, as much as the polls say that, you know, Biden is so far ahead, I don't think so. I'm really worried about 125 days from today.
I mean, I'm very worried about it, but I do think, you know, and I've always thought this, that in a free and fair election, Trump would lose. And at this point, given what they've done with coronavirus and unemployment and how much people are suffering and how much Trump has lied about this incredibly serious situation, I think that Biden would do pretty well in a free and fair election. And my worry is just that we're not going to have a free and fair election. And it's interesting to me that people are finally kind of overtly stating that 2016 was likely rigged. You know, this is something we were warned about in advance numerous times by Hillary Clinton, by Harry Reid, many others. No one did anything about it. The FBI, the Obama administration just decided to just, you know, roll the dice and see if we got a Kremlin asset in the White House, which we did. But there's now more, you know, kind of blatant, blunt talk about that. And I wonder what that's about, that they're finally coming clean. You know, and in addition to that, to the whole, you know, foreign interference and rigged machine aspect, you have domestic voter suppression, which is going to be worse because of new laws passed. You have Trump refusing to leave, which I think is a very likely possibility, even if Biden is overwhelmingly the winner, you know, even if it's quite clear. And I think that they'll use the coronavirus crisis to, you know, try to delegitimize the vote. If people have to vote by mail for health reasons, you know, which is actually a safer way of voting than voting in person, I think that they're going to claim voter fraud because right. they're already laying that narrative out.
No, absolutely. And, you know, they're suing the state of Pennsylvania over drop-off boxes. I mean, they're using their lawyers all around the country. I wanted to get your thoughts on Bolton's book, which, you know, like I said at the beginning, you know, kind of just confirms what we knew. You know, he's a petulant child who gets his news from Fox News, doesn't read the briefings, you know, a whole bunch of stuff, is not fit for office in any way, stretch or form. You know, thoughts on the book? I mean, I'm in this place where you should have testified. You should have, you know, if you're really the patriot that you make yourself out to be, you should have come forth when it mattered. Although in his book, he does claim that he wasn't subpoenaed.
Yeah, I mean, he should have come forward, you know, for the impeachment hearings. He should have come forward, you know, early on in the administration, but he was too busy doing things like defunding the CDC or plotting war with Iran. You know, he's an untrustworthy actor. Whenever there's a book that Trump says, oh my God, I don't want this to come out, so scandalous, it almost always has the same narrative, which is that Trump is incompetent. Not that he's malicious, not that he's tied to the mafia, not that he's committed crimes, but just, oh, he's incompetent, he's unqualified, he's a jackass, he's rude. You know, things that are bad, but they're not things that you can be imprisoned for, and they're not necessarily even things that you can be. It's true of the book. This was true of the Bob Woodward book. And so the minute I saw Trump doing this whole thing of, oh, no, I can't possibly have John Bolton write this, I was like, okay, this is one of those. I'm going to cover crime with scandal. I'm going to cover malice with incompetence. You know, Bolton's book might drive this home a little more in terms of just, you know, how terrible a human being Trump is. But really, like, if you haven't learned that by now, 4 years into this administration and 40 years into Trump as a public figure, like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, I don't know how your mind would possibly be swayed by John Bolton, of all people, you know, and an untrustworthy warmonger. So, yeah, I mean, in my mind, it's like the book exists, and that's that. And, you know, I'm not going to buy it, and I'm not going to read it.
When I'm done with it, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
That's
I'll
the
use
best.
It as a doorstop.
That's the best. And there's a good thing, good use for it. But, Sarah, as always, I appreciate the thoughts. Good stuff.
Hey, thank you.
A doorstop. Hey, maybe not a bad idea. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Let's take a quick break right back.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.